From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you, Stephanie Hansen, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Stephanie did today. Welcome back to part two of my chat with extraordinary woman Sarah Hung and episode number 147. If you haven't listened yet to part one, do go back and check it out to hear Sarah's keto story and how she became a breastfeeding consultant. Sarah has been on a low-carb and ketogenic diet for nearly 4 years and has never been happier with her diet and health. She was first accredited as an international board-certified lactation consultant in 2001. She ran a private practice called Lotus Lactation in Hong Kong for several years and previously worked on the maternity ward of the Matilda International Hospital in Hong Kong. Once upon a time, she was a mathematician and a transport planner. Sarah trained in the community with La Leche League and was accredited as a leader in July 1995. She has been helping mothers with breastfeeding problems and leading LLL meetings in Hong Kong ever since. Sarah has 4 children, all of whom were breastfed. I hope you enjoyed Sarah's story last week. Let's get started now on the conversation we had about breastfeeding. Sarah shares a wealth of knowledge in this and the next episode. Of course, it is important to remember that this is a generalized conversation and is not medical advice. If you are having problems with breastfeeding or are concerned that something is wrong, please do get some help from a professional. That being said, there are some fascinating things to learn. At least I thought so. So enjoy. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about why breastfeeding is a good thing. it's something that in some way seems very obvious, and most of us have heard the whole breast is best and that it's a really good idea to breastfeed your baby. But why specifically? Why is it that important? Why is it so much better, ideally anyway, to breastfeed rather than to use formula?
I think the main thing which sort of sums it all up is that breastfeeding's not better. Breastfeeding's normal. It is the biological norm to feed your babies with your own milk. And it has been made especially for your baby. In that, if I have a baby and you have a baby, then the milk I have is especially for my baby, whilst the milk you have will be especially for your baby. And the more and more research that we do about breastfeeding, the more fantastic we find out that it is. In that a lot of the sugars in breast milk, for instance, are not for the baby. They're actually for the bacteria that is inside the baby's gut.
Oh, interesting.
So you're feeding the bacteria, and the bacteria is having beneficial effects upon the baby. Mm. And the two most problems that you can get as a baby are basically respiratory infections and gastroenteritis infections. And these two types of infections are exactly what breast milk is designed to help with. So, you know, like if you have a lot of the immune system goes to the baby through the placenta. So the baby has this immune system from the placenta and from the mother, but respiratory illnesses and gastroenteritis illnesses are often brand new illnesses to the mother too. And so she has no way of helping the baby except she has breast milk, which helps. So as soon as either the mother or the baby comes into contact, well, as soon as the mother comes into contact with an illness, she will start making antibodies in her milk for that particular illness. So if the baby has an illness, and as soon as the baby breastfeeds, the mother comes into contact and will start making the antibodies. Now, ideally, the mother and baby are always together. So if the baby comes into contact with any illness, the mother will come into it. And so as soon as they come into contact with the illness, the mother starts making the antibodies. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. Mm. But as soon as the mother does come into contact with the baby and the illness, she starts making the antibodies.
Yes, of course. So there might be a slight delay, but the same thing applies.
The other good thing about these antibodies is that they fight the disease without the inflammation. So the baby doesn't get the symptoms of the disease because the milk is fighting that disease without those symptoms coming. And so the baby's able to retain the energy it needs.
That's really interesting. And isn't it the case that the first milk that is made, or is it classified as milk? Colostrum, it's a very important thing, isn't it, for the baby to intake after it's been born?
Yes. Colostrum is milk, and often what we say is it's just a different recipe to mature milk. Mm. So the first few days you have colostrum, and colostrum is very thick. I mean, when we think of milk, we think, oh, it's like white water. But colostrum is much more like honey than it is like white water. And so it's very thick, and it's absolutely packed full with immune properties for the baby. And so the baby only needs a very, very small amount of the colostrum. And the colostrum just comes out in drops. And one of the things about it is that it's basically a training ground for the baby to learn to breastfeed. So when the baby is breastfeeding in those very, very early days, the baby will try to breastfeed in different ways. And what tells the baby you're doing this right is that they get the reward. So they do it right. They get a reward of colostrum. They think, that was nice. I'll do that some more. And so they do it some more and they get another one. That's still nice, so I'll keep doing it. And as they get that reward of a drop of colostrum, it teaches them how to breastfeed. And so it is very important that they do have that time to try to learn to breastfeed. And then once the baby's swallowed the colostrum, it sort of lines the gut so that it stops the stomach from having holes in it, and so things can't pass through it.
Wow, how interesting. So it really is kind of like a starter pack in many ways, not only for what it does internally, but also, like you say, just as that kind of training ground. What happens if the baby misses out on that initial starter pack of colostrum?
Well, if for some reason, the baby's not well or something and can't manage to breastfeed, it doesn't mean that it's doomed or anything. It can learn to breastfeed. It's not the way it's all designed. It's designed for the baby to learn and then the baby to get more efficient at it and just to carry on. And obviously, if there's a problem, that can't happen, but it can still learn to breastfeed, but it tends to be more slowly and with more help.
Right.
And so if you have a very premature baby that is too young to be able to take the milk, what they ask the mothers to do is to express the colostrum and express their milk so that the babies can be fed later, and they keep the colostrum in the correct days until about day 5. And then after day 5, they just allow any of the mother's milk to be given. But when the baby starts feeding by mouth, they give day 1, then day 2, then day 3, then day 4, and so on, so that the baby gets that colostrum.
Interesting. And so it's clear why it's a good thing for the baby, but why is it a good thing for the mother to breastfeed as well? I'm assuming that there are benefits to her and her body and presumably, you know, the bonding experience with the baby and things like that.
Well, from a medical point of view, there are a number of illnesses which the mother is less likely to get if she is breastfeeding. For instance, breast cancer is one. Diabetes is another. If you have gestational diabetes whilst you're pregnant and you breastfeed, you're much less likely to go on and get full-grown diabetes in the future. There's a number of diseases like that where it is actually beneficial from the mother's point of view as well. So it's not just all give, give, give to the baby. You're getting things back as well. From a bonding point of view, my view is that it makes bonding very easy, in that very little thought has to go into it. It just seems to work naturally. Now, I have never had a baby that was not breastfed, so I don't know from a non-breastfeeding point of view whether it's just as easy. All I know is that from a breastfeeding point of view, it's very easy. I think if you're having problems with breastfeeding, it could easily, you know, whilst you're working through those problems, it can be a little bit difficult.
Yes, I can see that if you had some of the problems. That was my next question, actually. But if there were some problems, especially if it was in any way a painful experience for you, then that's going to start having negative associations in your mind, isn't it? When your baby's hungry and it needs to feed, and if you know that there's going to be a problem, it's going to be painful for you, that's obviously, I can see how that's going to interrupt that process.
The most important thing to remember is that breastfeeding should not be painful. So if it is painful, that is an indication that you need help. And if that help tells you, oh, it's normal for it to be painful, that's not helpful help.
Right.
You need to see somebody who will work through your problems and find out why is breastfeeding painful for you. The most common reason is what we call positioning, and the relative position of the baby to the mother and how the baby's opened its mouth. Because if you want, where the nipple has to go in the baby's mouth is the junction of the hard and soft palate. And so if you use your tongue and curl it back, you can find that junction.
Ah, yes. Mm.
And it's quite a ways back, and that is where the nipple has to go. Mm. And once the nipple's in that position, then the mouthing motion of the baby doesn't pinch the nipple. But if the nipple's further forward, then the gums will pinch the nipple, and that tends to be what causes the pain.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I can remember my sister had a few problems like that, and I can remember her talking about that exact thing, that it was, a lot of it was to do with the position, and just adjusting that hold really helped with that. Because I can imagine, especially as a first-time mum, the pressure must be huge. You think of breastfeeding as it's the natural thing to do, right? As you said when we started talking about it, actually it's the norm. It's natural. It's something that should come naturally to you. You should know how to do it. Everything should work fine. And if it doesn't, the tendency, especially as I imagine your emotional state is a little bit fragile when you've just gone through that hormonal disruption of giving birth, I should imagine the tendency, and I think it's quite often a female thing anyway, for the natural tendency is to blame yourself. What am I not doing right? What's, you know, it must be my fault that somehow I'm not able to do this natural thing that everyone can miraculously do. But I know when my sister spoke to the expert who helped her, they were so reassuring in saying, actually, you know, it's so common to not find this easy, for it not to just come naturally and work fantastically immediately. So perhaps you could just talk a little bit about some of the common things that might happen that stop it being really easy.
If you have a very easy birth with no drugs, you're very likely to have a very easy breastfeeding relationship with no drugs and no pain and no problems. But we tend to intervene throughout the birth process, and then we tend to intervene throughout the breastfeeding process. And it seems that not just the mother, but the medical establishment don't actually believe this can work. So the more interventions you have, the harder the breastfeeding will be as a general rule. And the less interventions you have, the easier it will be. But one of the things that we have discovered, I would say in about the last 10 years, is something that I call the laid-back breastfeeding position, where you're reclining in bed or on the sofa and the baby is on top of you. And you really want to be reclining to the point that you don't have to hold the baby, that gravity is holding the baby down onto your chest.
Interesting.
Obviously, it's not sort of natural for you to have the baby on you and your hands behind your head. But even though you've got your arms around the baby, your arms are not taking the weight of the baby. So they're relaxed rather than holding the strain of the baby. And in actual fact, what we know is that if you start the baby on your chest, the baby will get down to your breast, down to your nipple. And it will get down in different ways. Some of them will go bop, 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 bop and get down there. Some of them will just go and down straight away. Others will sort of crawl. But they use a multitude of instincts that they've got. And they have about 20 different instincts which help them get down to the breast. And the three instincts that everybody's heard of are rooting, sucking and swallowing. But those are just three out of about 20 of them. So this bobbing and using their hands to sort of crawl across the mother's body to get to the nipple are all things that the baby does by itself. And obviously, I'm not asking you just to lie there and let the baby do it. You know, it's an interaction between the mother and the baby. So if the mother feels, I want to help, then that's fine, you know. And what you find is that in that position, not only does it help the baby use its instincts, but it also helps the mother use her instincts. Because in our society today, we sort of forget that we are mammals and we have instincts. So if we can get the environment right for the mother and the baby, the instincts will come out by themselves and they will help with the breastfeeding. Basically, what has to happen is that the baby needs to feel the breast on its chin up to its nose. And when it feels the breast up against its mouth there and it knows it's in the right place, it will open its mouth and go up and over the nipple and latch on for you.
It's fascinating. And I really like the logic when you said there are so many different instincts that the baby can use. To me, to my logic, that says that the perfect mix is going to be so individual for the baby. And so actually giving the baby the opportunity to figure out which instincts is naturally going to get it to find the best position that will help it breastfeed optimally, the best way.
The big problem we have is that for a long time, we've been telling mothers to sit up straight and have the baby across them. And in this position, the gravity is pulling the baby away from the mother's body. And so the mother is having to hold the baby up and putting strain on her shoulders and her wrists. And then as the baby's trying to use its instincts, so it's bobbing against the breast, every bob, because of the gravity, pulls it away. Mm. And often mothers say things like, "Oh, my baby's boxing me," or "my baby is rejecting me," when in actual fact, the baby's trying to use its instincts, but because gravity's working in the wrong direction on the baby, it's not able to do it.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And so if you look at older texts about babies, they'll tell you to swaddle the baby's arms so that they're not fighting to try and get in the way. But once you bring the mother back, those hands that were fighting before are now moving gently towards the nipple.
Mm.
And when I worked in the hospital, sometimes I was privileged enough to be able to go and spend like the first hour with the mother and see the baby do this, what we call the breast crawl across and latch on. And it's really nice because you can point out to her what the baby's doing.
Mm.
And you don't have to touch either of them. You know, you're just sitting there enjoying it all and just pointing out, well, your baby's doing this now. Can you see the baby's doing that and the baby's doing that? And it's really nice.
Oh, I love that. That's really interesting. And it makes so much sense. I mean, we said earlier when we were talking about keto, how it's great when everything just falls into place and it makes sense. And I love that. That just sounds the same. Understanding, you know, being told, yes, why your baby's like you were just explaining there, to be able to say to the mum, yeah, that movement you're seeing there, that's what that means. And this is what the baby's trying to do. And I can imagine for the mum, things just falling into place and everything making sense and how it just being a fantastic way to tune in to what your baby's trying to tell you, because obviously it can't speak yet.
One of the things that they do as they are preparing to latch is that they suck their hands. And the baby's mouth is a perfect size to suck on its fist and to latch onto its fist correctly.
Mm.
And mothers often get upset that the baby's sucking at their hands instead of trying to breastfeed. But they're practicing on their hand and they know where their hand is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take their hand away and they know how to get back to their hand. So once they try to grab the nipple with their hand, then they know how to move the mouth to their hand.
And therefore
move their mouth towards the nipple. And it's a bit like, I don't know if you ever used to on Halloween do apple dunking.
Oh, yes. Mm.
Yeah. And you're meant to have your hands behind your back and you dunk and you try and get the apple and it's really difficult to get it. But if you cheat and you grab the apple with your hand, it's very easy to get your mouth and bite onto the apple. And basically what the baby's doing is cheating at nipple bobbing. You know, it sucks on its hand and then the hand grabs the nipple and then it knows how to bring its mouth to the nipple. It's not a quick process. You can get videos of them doing it on the internet and it makes it look like, oh, this is all going to happen in 2 minutes, but it's much more likely to take 45 minutes.
Right.
It reminds me a bit of Match of the Day. Because, you know, they used to show you the highlights.
Mm.
And I used to think, oh, football is so exciting. And then my brother took me to a match. And it wasn't.
Yeah, you have to get through all the boring bits.
It's a bit
bits.
Like that. You know, on the videos, they just give you the highlights. So it is important to realise that it's going to actually take quite a long time.
So what about some of the things that happen that actually do make the process more difficult? So things like tongue ties, and someone mentioned I'd never heard of lip ties. Presumably it's a similar thing in a slightly different place.
Well, you can have problems with the oral structures in your mouth. It's very difficult to generalize about it.
Right.
And so if anybody feels that they do have that sort of problem, they need to go and see somebody and get help with it. But it can have a significant impact on the breastfeeding, particularly because the tongue, the baby uses the tongue in order to breastfeed. And so if the baby doesn't have the correct motion in the tongue or can't elevate the tongue to the top of its mouth, then it is a problem.
Right.
The tongue in a baby is much, much larger proportionally to its mouth than an adult tongue. So the baby's tongue basically fills the whole of the oral cavity. So it needs to be able to use it in the correct way.
Mm. And what about the other thing that came to my mind when I was thinking of why breastfeeding might be painful for the mother? And that was if there were problems with infections, with mastitis.
Yes. Mastitis is where you have an infection in your breast. And usually it happens because the milk isn't flowing particularly well.
Right.
So you get stagnant milk in the breast.
Mm.
And when it's stagnant, instead of flowing through all the time, it's much easier to get infection. The most important thing is to try and get the milk to flow constantly. If you have these problems, it's very important to get help and not just assume, oh, this is normal part of breastfeeding, but to go and get help either from a lactation consultant or to see your doctor.
It sounds like that's a general theme. If anything about breastfeeding feels like it's particularly difficult or it's painful in any way, or there's something that you think that's happening that is a problem, something that's not going right, it sounds like that is the general rule. Go and get help. You need some help. This is not something that it's your job to either keep a brave face on and struggle through, or something that it's your job to figure out because you should somehow automatically know all the answers. It sounds like this is a general rule. If it's not working as you think it should be, you need to go and get some help.
I would agree with that. Definitely, if it's painful, you need help, because breastfeeding should not be painful. Mm. So whatever pain it is, then you should go and get professional help to get over that problem. There are a lot of things that people worry about. Sort of, is this normal? Do I have enough milk? And there's a lot of normal infant behaviours that people don't understand. So I have one that I call the chocolate cake syndrome. So I want you to imagine me and my husband, we're at home, we're at our dining table, and I give him his meal. And as we eat, I say to him, oh, I have some chocolate cake for dessert. And he says, oh, I'm full, I don't think I want any chocolate cake. Well, I've been married a long time, so I know how to deal with this. I say, let's watch TV. We watch TV, the first lot of adverts come on, and he'll say, you know, Sarah, maybe I'll have a piece of chocolate cake after all. So babies are like this, you know, they'll feed on one side, and then you'll feed them on the other side, and then they say, right, I've had enough. And you think, oh, great, I'll pop you down, and then I can go and do ABC. And after you've popped them down, within like 2 minutes or something, they wake up and they say, I want more milk, I need more milk. And it's a behaviour that a lot of mothers worry, I don't have enough milk, otherwise my baby wouldn't cry. But it's just the chocolate cake syndrome. You just pick them up, you feed them, maybe 5-10 minutes again, they have their piece of chocolate cake, and often they're willing to go back to sleep. And the other one is one I call the Chinese banquet syndrome. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a Chinese banquet, but I'll describe one just in case. So when you go to a Chinese banquet, you have between 10 and 12 courses, depending whether they're green banquets or normal banquets. So you sit down, you have a small portion of food, and then you wait. And then they bring the second course, and you have a small portion of food, and then you wait. And so this goes on and on and on until you've had the required number of courses. And then at the end of the banquet, you get up, you shake hands with the host and say, thank you for having me. And you go out onto the street and you think, oh, I'm really full. I just want to hail a taxi and go home and sleep this off. So babies, whether they're Chinese or not, they like eating in Chinese banquets. So they like to have a little bit, and then they like to rest for a little while. And then they like to eat for a little bit, and they like to rest for a little bit. And they like to eat, and so on. And they go on for what feels like hours and hours and hours. The official term for this is called cluster feeding, but I think calling it Chinese banqueting is more descriptive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the baby might feed for 10 minutes and then rest for 10 minutes and then feed for 5 minutes and then rest for 15 minutes. And then it might feed for another 5 minutes and rest for 15 minutes. And then it might feed for 15 minutes and rest for 5 minutes, you know, and it just keeps going on and on. And at the end, when it's decided that it's had enough and the banquet is over, that is generally when the baby goes to sleep for that little bit longer, maybe 3 or 4 hours instead of just 1.5 to 2 hours. The analogy of the Chinese banquet and the chocolate cake is actually quite good because, like, a chocolate cake is a high-fat snack you have after your dinner. And any milk the baby gets towards the end of the feed will be higher in fat than it was at the beginning of the feed.
Oh, interesting. And that brings to mind some terms I heard thrown about when my sister was breastfeeding, when my brother's partner was breastfeeding. The whole concept of scheduled feeding versus feeding on demand. I presume from the way you're talking that the feed in demand is probably the one that's more in keeping with the sort of natural flow of what the baby wants, regardless of when it says it wants it.
Yes, it is. And it is the one that makes breastfeeding easiest.
Right.
In that the baby needs to be fed, small babies, yeah, need to be fed between 8 and 12 times within 24 hours. And you notice that I'm not saying every 2 to 3 hours, but 8 times between, because sometimes they will do this cluster feeding and they might have 6 feeds in just a 2-hour lot. And sometimes they will sleep a little bit longer. And so long as the baby is getting those 8 to 12 feeds in the 24 hours, so long as the baby is getting at least 5 wet nappies and is getting 2 dirty nappies every 24 hours, then it'll be doing fine. This is after the mature milk starts increasing. So we're not talking about the colostrum period. We're talking about after you've gone home from hospital, basically.
You mentioned a little while ago milk supply being a common concern. Take a quick shout out and thanks to the members in the Facebook group in KKB for providing some of the ideas for questions and things they wanted answers to. So a quick thanks to them as an aside. But one of the things that came up, probably I would hazard a guess that came up the most, was milk supply and concerns about that. And there were various questions around it, from being concerned about whether you were producing enough, if you're not producing enough, how to increase milk supply, what the difference is with milk supply between a standard American diet and keto, what happens if you're transitioning from SAD to keto, all these things. So perhaps you could cover as many of those as you can.
Well, first of all, milk supply. They often say it's supply and demand, but basically it's demand and supply.
Right.
So the baby demands it and the mother supplies it. Mm-hmm. but it's slightly more complicated than that. There's something we call your breast capacity. And the breast capacity is how much milk can your breast hold at any one given time. So, you know, women come in all sorts of different sizes and shapes. And guess what? Their breasts do too. So somebody may have a large breast capacity and somebody may have a small breast capacity. And if you have a large breast capacity, then you can hold quite a lot of milk. And when the baby feeds, the baby can drink quite a lot of milk at one sitting. And if you have a small breast capacity, the baby can only drink a small amount of milk at one sitting. So say I say to you, I want you to drink a litre of water today, and here's a pint pot. All you have to do is fill your pint pot up twice, and that's your litre.
Mm.
But if I say to the next person, here's an espresso cup.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that that person can't drink a litre of water. It just means that they've got to fill that espresso cup up a number of times. And basically, that's how the breast capacity works. Mm. In that, if you have a large breast capacity, then as the baby grows and is able to manage it, they tend to fall into having less feeds because their feeds are bigger. If you've got a small breast capacity, then the baby will fall into the pattern of having more feeds because their feeds are smaller.
Makes sense.
But the overall output throughout the whole day is the same. But everybody tries to compare themselves to somebody else. And if you've got a small breast capacity and you're comparing yourself with your friend who's got a large breast capacity and she only has to feed once every 4 hours and you have to feed once every 2 hours, you feel I'm doing something wrong. And as you were saying before, as women, we are always blaming ourselves. You know, for some reason, men don't do that. They blame somebody else. But we blame ourselves. And so we see ourselves wanting because my baby's feeding a lot more often. When in actual fact, whatever works, works. If you know what I mean. Like often what I find is that mothers with the first baby will feed like once every 3 hours as the baby gets older, because that's what they believe is correct. Mothers of second babies can't manage that because they've got the elder baby to look after. So they tend to feed for shorter feeds because they get interrupted.
Mm.
So they tend to have more shorter feeds for the second baby. And like when I had my third child, I knew he would feed for 5 minutes. So if I wanted to go out, I would get the shoes and socks on all the rest. And then I would feed him. And I could guarantee that within 5 minutes, we'd be out the door. He might need feeding again in the taxi and he might need feeding again at the doctor's office when we got there and things. But I would know that I would be able to get out of the door and catch a taxi and go where we needed to go. So I think it's important to whatever style your baby's in to make it fit your life and see the positives of it rather than the negatives.
So it sounds like part of the question of milk supply and whether you've got enough or not is actually just working out the context, working how your body works, and actually figuring out whether it is an issue or not in the first place. But presumably sometimes it is an issue and there isn't enough milk supply.
Yeah, the most common problem, particularly in the early days, is that the baby is not efficiently emptying the breast. In order to make milk, the breast needs to be not exactly emptied, but it needs a quantity taken out. And if the baby has a very weak suck and say is premature and is not able to take the quantity needed out, then the milk sits in the breast. And as your milk sits in your breast, there's a factor called FIL, which is feedback inhibitor of lactation, which tells your breast to stop making milk. So what we want is for you to, as soon as that fill has got large in the breast, you want to take the milk out, takes the fill with it, and then you start all over again. So the less milk your breast has in it, the faster you make milk. And the fuller your breast is, the slower you make milk. Well, the point we never want to get to is to be so full that the breast says, oh, we'll stop making milk. Because you're always wanting to be making milk.
Mm.
So in those early days, what is important is to take milk out of the breast frequently and effectively. And so if for some reason the baby is not able to do that, then that is when you have to help your body by either hand expressing or pumping to take the milk out so that it signals your body to make more milk, even when the baby is not capable of it.
Right, yes, that makes sense. And how do you figure out, you mentioned something about needing a certain quantity of nappies, basically. So how do you know that your baby's getting enough? You know, what if you have a baby that you feel is not drinking as much milk as maybe you think it should? I don't know exactly how to frame this question, but you probably get the idea. How do you know your baby's consuming the right amount?
We're looking for 5 to 7 wet nappies each day, each 24 hours. And if you're using cloth nappies, we're looking for even more because the disposable ones hold a lot more liquid.
Right.
We're looking for at least 2 dirty nappies with stools in them. And we're looking for at least about a large coin size in the nappy. We don't want just a sort of a little wet fart. We actually want a quantity inside the nappy.
Mm.
And obviously over time, we're looking for weight increase as well.
Mm.
One of the good signs is that as your milk supply increases from the colostrum into the mature milk, we're looking for the colour of the stool to change. So generally, the mature milk breastfed stool is a sort of goldeny mustard colour. And we tend to say that they come in 3 different styles. We get a watery style, a curdy style, and a sesame seed style. And I'll leave the rest to your imagination.
Gosh, I can remember the colours of nappies. I used to get fairly involved in nappy changing for my brother and sister. And yes, I can remember. It's a long time ago, but I can remember some pretty lurid colours going on. But some people were asking about milk supply and if you do need to increase it. And it sounds like potentially most of that is a mechanical thing. It's this, it's what you were saying about the breast fill and it needing to be empty, or at least as close enough as it needs to be to being empty to refilling. But is there also sometimes a need to boost supply through the diet? You hear about lactation cookies and you hear about different foods that are supposed to boost the milk supply. And there are questions often in breastfeeding keto communities where, what are the foods in keto that I can use? And particularly if the mother is transitioning from SAD to keto, they sometimes talk about changes in milk supply.
Generally, the most important thing is to empty the breast regularly.
Mm.
And the other ways, you know, the galactagogues, which are the things that you can take to increase your milk supply, they can have a marginal effect, but not if you are not emptying your breasts regularly.
Right.
And so it is much more important when talking about milk supply that we tick all these boxes first to find out how often the baby's feeding, how effectively is the baby feeding, before we start talking about galactagogues and things. And as far as I can see, each culture has different foods that they believe will help. I know more about the foods straight after birth in the recovery period than I do actually about which foods are good as galactagogues. But the foods straight after birth, for instance, when you look at them all, they have 2 things in common from all the different cultures. And those 2 things are, they're high in iron and they're high in calcium.
Hmm.
And guess what 2 minerals a new mother is most likely to be deficient in? Straight after birth, iron and calcium.
Right.
So I do believe that good nutrition will help your body do what it needs to do. And what tends to happen with the nutrition is that if the mother doesn't have enough for both her and the baby, it goes to her milk for the baby first. And so her general health will decrease. So often around the world, you'll see this first month or 6 weeks that they really push the nutrition of the mother in order to help her replenish so that she can continue to feel well while she's breastfeeding. Like there's parts of China where they eat as many as 12 to 14 eggs a day during the first month after the baby's born. And in Hong Kong, we have something called gern chow, which is ginger vinegar, which is ginger, sort of sweet, very delicious vinegar, probably got too many carbs, and trotters and eggs. And this has huge amounts of iron and huge amounts of calcium. And you start eating it on the 12th day and you just carry on until it's all gone. But they keep adding more things. So like the lady who helped look after me when I had Jacob, she came, oh, it's not got enough ginger, put more ginger in. Oh, it's not got enough trotters, put more trotters in. Oh, it's not got enough eggs, put that. It's not got enough vinegar, put more vinegar in. And in the end, she doubled the quantity. But you're actually meant to give it to all females who come to visit you with the baby, because it's not just good for a new mother, it's good for all females, because often we are lacking in calcium and iron.
Oh, how interesting. So yes, it sounds very much then like milk supply actually is often approached from the wrong direction, really, is often approached from a question of, or a potential solution of, oh, eat more of this food, where that is actually going to have quite a minimal impact. You really need to be going back to the potential roots of the problem.
You have to find out what the problem is and why is there potential for a low milk supply and solve that problem. And if you want to then use galactagogues, you've got to be doing everything else right first before you start the galactagogue. Mm. Otherwise, the galactagogue isn't powerful enough by itself to correct incorrect management or the baby not being able to drink the milk in the breast and things.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Stacey Stewart. A mother's worth is measured in love and not ounces. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.